Jason.
Thank you and amen.
Oh, all righty.
From the downtown Minneapolis studios of News Talk A30 WCCO, this is Minnesota's most trusted station for news.
And good evening, Adam Carter in the WCCO newsroom. We have mostly cloudy skies and 31 degrees in the Twin Cities. We start out with some different kind of news tonight, and it's a good ending to some breaking news we had locally here. An Amber Alert that was issued for a three-year-old child has been canceled as the child and the child's mother were found safe in Brooklyn Park late this afternoon. That, according to Minneapolis police authorities, say the woman and child were forced into a vehicle in northeast Minneapolis just after noon today. They say it was not a random act. The suspect remains on the run. Well, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz today keeping an eye on the situation in Washington, D.C. and in St. Paul, as close to 500 supporters of President Trump showed up to protest at the state capitol, and then some marched to the governor's mansion as Congress began to certify President-elect Biden's election win.
I just want to take just a moment to assure Minnesotans that the situation here is calm and stable. I just was speaking in contact with Senate Majority Leader Gazelka, a man of honor, a friend, and the two of us are in absolute alignment that the sacredness of our democracy, the ability to disagree agreeably, is fundamental.
The governor today also announcing some loosening of the state's COVID restrictions. Starting Monday, restaurants and bars can reopen for in-person service at 50% capacity, closing at 10 p.m. Other businesses like movie theaters and museums can reopen at 25%. We have a complete rundown on our website, WCCORadio.com. Well, the violence outside the U.S. Capitol today happened as both houses of Congress were performing the ceremonial certification of the presidential election, one that was marred by some Republicans who pushed a futile challenge to the certification. Texas Senator Ted Cruz was one of the leaders of the effort, and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar called him on it.
He knows that all 10 living defense secretaries, including both of Trump's defense secretaries, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, William Cohen, he knows that all these leaders have come together to say that these scurrilous attacks on our democracy must stop, and we must allow for a peaceful transition of power.
Sadly, that prospect of a peaceful transition of power evaporated this afternoon as Trump supporters stormed into the U.S. Capitol. At least one person reportedly killed as gunfire was exchanged. Much more coverage of the situation in Washington, D.C. now at 6:01 as we return to CBS News.
Back, and more of the protesters are streaming from this area, which suggests that police are being more successful in their efforts to clear this Capitol area.
President Trump tweeted this video message to supporters hours after it all started.
You have to go home now. We have to have peace. We have to have law and order. We have to respect our great people in law and order. We don't want anybody hurt.
He later tweeted that this is what happens when, quote, a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away. That tweet and the video appear to have been removed by Twitter. The president-elect's message, decidedly different.
This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It borders on sedition. And it must end now.
As for the business of counting the electoral votes, that resumes in about an hour. On Wall Street, the Dow closed up 438 points. Now this.
And a sacred landslide election is stripped away from great patriots, which, of course, is not true. He echoed that falsehood in a message that the White House released earlier today. But we should note it was pre-recorded. It was not a live address, which, of course, carries more urgency. And it came 2 hours after we saw the unrest begin, and only after a growing number of calls from Republican leaders and President elect Joe Biden for Mr. Trump to directly speak to the crowd. Here's what he said.
You have to go home now. We have to have peace. We have to have law and order. We have to respect our great people in law and order. We don't want anybody hurt.
In that same message, Nora, he also amplified the very falsehoods that were fueling the violence today, again claiming that the election was rigged. And so that is why there is so much criticism tonight against President Trump from only reacting to what has happened, but missing the opportunity to proactively ask his supporters to remain calm as they came here to Washington. And of course, what we don't know now is also what he plans to do next. After Congress certifies these results, he is absolutely out of options. He already is. He has made clear he will not concede. So will he offer any sort of leadership in his final days of office? Nora?
Weijia Zhang there at the White House in what has no doubt been an extraordinary day there, as well as the vice president, who for 4 years has been quite loyal to this president in every way, has today broken with the president.
Only in the sense that he is upholding the Constitution and governing federal law. And for that to be a rupture in a relationship between any vice president and president is a scandal in this country. And to your point, Nora, about this idea of loyalty and fulfilling every mandate that President Trump laid before his vice president, I am reminded of an interview I conducted with Chris Christie about a year ago when his book came out. And Chris Christie, in the middle of that interview, said, President Trump is most disloyal to the people who are most loyal to him.
Mm.
Let that sink in for a second. And Mike Pence, the most loyal Republican within 100 miles of President Trump for 4 straight years, is living that nightmare today. And the country got a glimpse of a nightmarish aspect of what President Trump can incite, and does enliven in the most poisonous corners of American politics by what we saw play out in the nation's capital.
At the same time, what was the warning we heard today from the Republican leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, who has also been extraordinarily loyal to this president and has not rebuked him at barely any steps?
He has tried to ignore and sidestep most of the most outrageous things that President Trump has said, and on judges, regulations, tax policy, completely locked up with the president. But he said, if what was contemplated by those who wish to object to this election was carried out, democracy would be, and I'm quoting him directly, in a death spiral. He said the Congress would turn itself into a national board of elections on steroids, that the evidence the president cites is extraordinarily thin, the underlying election was not unusually close, and the president has embraced sweeping conspiracy theories.
Sweeping conspiracy theories leveled at the president of the United States. We now have Mitt Romney saying that Trump incited an insurrection at the Capitol. There is blame from a number of Republicans squarely at the president for what has happened to an institution, no matter what party, that they dearly love and revere. And as a result, I think we're going to see an image, certainly, that they want to present of unity tonight, as senators are going to walk back together, as Grace Ears has reported, back into the Capitol. Not only, I think, an important message domestically, but externally as well, to foreign governments who tonight are allies expressing concern and unity with the United States, our adversaries making hay out of what has happened here in our nation's capital.
It's incredible to think that the Canadian Prime Minister, the British Prime Minister, issue statements about political unrest in the United States of America. It's supposed to be the other way around.
Yeah.
We aren't the subject of those kinds of statements. We're the ones making them about other corners of the world. And today, we are no better than things that go on in Caracas, Managua, Eastern Europe. It's just incredible.
Except that we do have what has been a largely peaceful disbursement of these crowds.
Correct.
By law enforcement. In those other countries, those who carried out a mob or a protest in this way would be shot dead.
Right. But as Michael Morrell told us earlier today, the PR aspect of this in corners of the world will be, see, you want democracy, it's going to look a lot like that.
But there is an exasperation now by Republican members who have had to spend the last 4 hours huddled together in a secure place together. Roy Blunt, a member of the Republican leadership, saying, I don't want to hear anything from Trump tonight.
And that's a man who faces a re-election in 2 years and knows.
Correct.
He would possibly, probably need support from, supporters.
And who does not endorse his junior Missouri colleague, Josh Hawley's, efforts to object to the acceptance by Congress of the Electoral College votes. Mm-hmm. And doing so knowing that the Trump world has vowed to, quote unquote, primary, therefore politically attack any Republican who doesn't, quote unquote, fight on behalf of the president. It is worth noting that that fight is anti-constitutional, anti-federalist, and antithetical to everything America stands for.
And for those Republicans that said today was unimaginable, there have been some who have saying, no, this is the culmination of continuing to allow President Trump to have no guardrails. And that was part of the exasperation, you could call desperation, that we heard in the voice of the Republican leader of the House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy, who we spoke with earlier today. He was the first indication that we got that they were desperately calling the White House, telling the president, this must end. Take a listen. Why have you all run from the Capitol? Why not stay there and meet these people who believe the same way that you do? Why not meet them with courage?
I can't tell you where we are out of safety for everybody else. But the one thing I will tell you is people can have a disagreement. We disagree every day when it comes to politics. People can have that. Not this. Nobody supports this. Nobody encourages this. Nobody wants this. I want to be very clear. I condemn any of this activity. This is not anything I support. This is not anything that I would be a part of. And this has got to stop.
This has got to stop from the most senior Republican in the House of Representatives. The question will be, what will they do? That is the question at 8 o'clock tonight. This must stop how? Or will they continue the debate over counting the electoral votes? Will the Republican leadership in the House of Representatives be able to corral the objections of House members? Or will it have to occur in the Senate? Because you need both a written objection from a House member and a Senate member. Yeah. Will the Senate hold the line on this? Or will we go back into a debate again like we saw earlier today? In terms of the guardrails for democracy, tonight we see Twitter, Facebook, other social media companies that are under fire for disseminating misinformation, allowing the wildfire to spread of misinformation, taking some limited action. Ed?
That's right. A little while ago, Twitter announced that as a result, I'm just quoting from them, as a result of the unprecedented and ongoing violent situation in Washington, D.C., they're requiring the removal of 3 Real Donald Trump tweets, quote, that were posted earlier today for repeated and severe violations of our civic integrity policy. In a subsequent tweet, they say they will lock the account of the president for 12 hours following the removal of these tweets. If the tweets are not removed, the account will remain locked. Future violations, including our civic integrity or violent threats policy, will result in permanent suspension of the @RealDonaldTrump account. And I can hear some of you viewers through the camera saying, what took them so long and why only now? But it's being done. And Facebook also earlier today took down the video of what he had posted this afternoon out of similar concern, that while he was telling these protesters to go home and stop, he was still spreading misinformation and inciting his supporters by reiterating these falsehoods about the election being stolen from him.
Mm-hmm. And it's worth noting that in this context, the president has assailed in every direction in Washington. He has assailed the Supreme Court. He has assailed his own Justice Department. He has assailed his FBI. He has assailed Republicans. He has assailed anyone who does not endorse, amplify, and seek to legislatively or procedurally topple this election. That is the loyalty test he is now applying. It is without precedent in our history.
The other big headline of the day is Democrats taking control of the United States Senate. That big runoff election just yesterday, 2 Senate races, unprecedented turnout. More than 4.5 million people in a January election turning out, more than 70% voting via mail, more than 1 million coming out to the polls. The Republican Party feeling confident going in that they would likely win those races. And it turns out that the 2 Democratic candidates actually outperformed Joe Biden among key Democratic constituencies, among African-Americans, among young people in the suburbs, doing better than expected. And therefore, CBS News projects that both Democrats have won those 2 seats. Really an extraordinary development given to not only just about what's changed in the state of Georgia, once a ruby red state, and the changing demographics in a state like this. But Raphael Warnock is the reverend and the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, where Martin Luther King spoke from that podium. I was there for the just this year for the funeral of John Lewis. This is a landmark election because Senator-elect Warnock, I guess we could call him Reverend Warnock, becomes the first African-American elected Democrat from the South, the first from Georgia. Extraordinary. As he pointed out today, his mother, who used to pick cotton in Georgia, was able to pick her son and vote for her son to be a United States Senator.
And this is part of the legacy as well of the last 2 years of political fighting in this country, that we have seen tremendous change and progress in corners of the country where many didn't think it was possible. And this is also the result of about a decade's worth of work by Democrats in Georgia to gin up support, find people,
contact them, speak to them,
and get them to
try to persuade them. It's hard work. It takes many, many years. Both parties learn this. But there's some interesting news to share with you, Nora and Ed. The Vice President's office has just released a statement saying two things that are important. One, that the Vice President never left the Capitol, and that he has worked throughout the day with all branches of government and senior congressional leadership to make this situation better. That's my description of what the statement says, and that he is prepared to resume his duties tonight when Congress reconvenes.
That's extraordinary. There's a lot of news coming out of the Capitol. I want to talk about that in just a minute. But first, also want to go to Georgia as we're on that note, because Mark Strassman has covered those two Senate races there, and he is outside Ebenezer Church tonight. Mark?
Nora, with your indulgence, I want to talk first about a further ripple of what we've been watching in Washington. Georgia's Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and his staff for the last several weeks have needed security because they've lived with threats. Well, this morning outside the state capitol building in downtown Atlanta, a group of Trump protesters gathered. On the other side of the building stood four men in military-style clothing carrying long guns. And out of an abundance of caution, Raffensperger decided to evacuate his staff. He sent them all home because he knew that, after all, they still had an election to oversee. And even though there are thousands of ballots here still uncounted, apparently there is no way that the Republican candidates can make up the gap. So we have two senators elect here in Georgia. First, of course, is John Ossoff. John Ossoff is 33 years old. He's the first Jewish senator elected from the state of Georgia. And then you have our Pastor Raphael Warnock, the first black senator elected from the state of Georgia. It has been a remarkable and historic day, a remarkable and historic election, 24 hours here in Georgia. It's a day that many Democrats and many Republicans never thought that they would live to see, and yet it's here. And I have to tell you that the ripples here, what it suggests about Georgia as a changing state, the referendum on the Trump years, because the president came here and campaigned nominally for these candidates, mostly for himself and his fraud allegations. And in the end, Metro Atlanta's changing demographics, younger, more diverse, more progressive, turned their back on the president and instead voted for the two Democrats. And again, it's something that many state Republicans here are furious about, because they believe that the president's approach was a distraction, helped depress turnout among Republicans, because in the end, not enough Republican voters showed up, and more than enough Democratic voters showed up. Nora?
And I know Mark is someone that has lived there in Atlanta and Georgia and reports all the time and talks to many people. It seems remarkable what has changed there.
You know, it really has. It's, you know, Georgia, as you've said, once ruby red, that has been slowly changing. But you do have the sense, both with the president's defeat here and now with the two senators, that these changes may be happening much faster than people realized, and that the Republican Party's traditional approach wasn't working particularly well as time was going on. And then, of course, the Trump years were something profoundly different. The whole overall approach is very, very different. And I think what you can say here is that the president wore out his welcome in the suburbs of Atlanta. Many Republicans, who I know, lifelong Republicans, have said, yeah, I just can't do it. And so there is going to be a moment of reckoning, I think, here in Georgia and elsewhere. Georgia could be a cautionary tale for other red states that have gone all in on the Trump approach and essentially been very, very loyal to the president. So we're going to have to see how that goes, of course, in the days and weeks ahead. But clearly, there is a real seismic shift going on here in Georgia.
It's a brilliant political analysis and reporting. Thank you, Mark Strassman, because even one of the closest aides to the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, made that point. When the results finally came in, he made the point. He said, suburbs, 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 that when you've turned off those suburban voters that could be traditionally more conservative, that want to perhaps vote Republican, but we saw this in the presidential election, but we're turned off by some of the president's rhetoric and other stuff, switch back to the Democratic Party, that is the flashing warning sign for the Republican Party that I think led Mitch McConnell today to deliver that extraordinary rebuke of the president, as well as the efforts by his Republican colleagues to prolong this process. Because you both have covered the Congress, as have I. McConnell will usually let the process kind of play itself out, knowing that it will reach an ultimate outcome. Today, he made clear he wasn't in favor of this process, that some of the Republican senators were under.
No, not only was he not in favor of it, he had actively, privately discouraged it, was unable to achieve that, and was essentially, with his speech, taking those who did not heed his request to the rhetorical woodshed. There's something important about Georgia. Because we talked earlier about, were there warning signs? Yes, there were. Gabriel Sterling, one of the top election officials in Georgia, who has had to repeatedly debunk and explain away all of these wacky, unjustified theories of things going askew with vote counts in Georgia, many weeks ago said, Mr. President, stop this rhetoric. People will get hurt. People will get shot. He said those words out loud with great passion and great emphasis. Weeks ago, not yesterday, he foreshadowed, sadly, regrettably, heartbreakingly, what we saw play out today.
Mm-hmm. There's been another development for those that follow politics closely. Richard Burr is a retiring Republican senator from North Carolina. There's been talk that Lara Trump will actually try and seek his seat.
President's daughter-in-law, yeah.
Yes. Richard Burr has been referred to as a good old boy many times, and today he issues a strong rebuke of the president, saying this: the president bears responsibility for today's events by promoting the unfounded conspiracy theories that have led to this point. It is past time to accept the will of American voters and to allow the nation to move forward. We are now just about 40 minutes away from finding out what will happen with the rest of the Republican Party on Capitol Hill and what they will do as they continue this constitutionally mandated process of counting the electoral votes. Will they fall in line behind the Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and others who seem exasperated and disgusted with what has happened today, or will they continue to oppose and pour fuel on these unfounded conspiracy theories that Senator Richard Burr, the Republican from North Carolina, has just mentioned?
And so far, we got word of only one member of the House Republican contested caucus saying she's instead now going to back off and vote to approve these electoral college. Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington State, former member of House Republican leadership, now saying that she will not join her colleagues in contesting these results. We'll see if there are more of those, but that's a signal that at least some of them have certainly seen what happened today and realized there are graver consequences.
We're going to take a quick break, and our coverage of the assault on the Capitol continues in just a moment.
Today, when you shop or browse online, your personal information can be exposed. One minute it's in your hand, the next it's there. There and everywhere, making you vulnerable to cyber criminals. That's why Norton 360 with LifeLock helps protect the info on your devices, your online privacy, and your identity all in one. Your info may be out there, but safety starts here at Norton.com.
Today, a mob stormed the United States Capitol, forcing it into lockdown and bringing out more than 1,100 members of the D.C. National Guard, who at this hour have secured the United States Capitol, with the Senate and the House now saying they will resume their activities at 8 o'clock in order to continue the process of counting the electoral votes, the final step in acknowledging that President-elect Joe Biden won the 2020 presidential election, and in 2 weeks from today will be inaugurated as the 46th president of the United States. I want to bring in Nancy Cordes, who is on Capitol Hill. And Nancy, tell us what you're hearing may happen in the next half an hour.
Well, Nora, we're seeing some movement. Workers from the Senate floor, the aides who basically keep the Senate running, have now been escorted back from a Senate office building where they have been holed up for hours, back over to the Senate floor to prepare for the Senate coming back into session around 8 p.m. to continue its debate of these Electoral College results. So that's the first concrete sign that we have seen that this is, in fact, getting underway, and that they are, in fact, aiming for an 8 p.m. start. And then we just got word from Steny Hoyer, he's the number two Democrat in the House, he controls the House floor, that they are trying to get revved up as well. He says members are advised that as soon as the House Sergeant at Arms confirms that the Capitol building is safe and secure, the House is expected to reconvene and resume debate. This is important to lawmakers for a couple of reasons. First of all, they want to show that an angry mob is not going to stop them from doing the people's work. It is laid out in the Constitution, after all, that this is something that Congress does on the 6th of January after an election year. They go ahead and they count up the Electoral College ballots and they announce the winner. So they don't want to be kept from that job. They say it's a very important piece of business, and they don't want it to appear either to other Americans or around the world that they were stopped from doing that today. So they want to get back to work. The big question now, Nora, is what are House and Senate Republicans going to do? Are they going to continue with their plan to contest the results in, let's say, five more battleground states? They're meeting at this hour, the Senate Republicans at least. They're in a room. We've got reporters outside of that room ready to tell us what's happened once they come out. But it is a mystery right now. And there's a very good chance that there is a diversity of thought, if you will, among these Republicans about what exactly they should do. You've got Josh Hawley of Missouri, Ted Cruz of Texas, James Lankford of Oklahoma. These are very different individuals who sort of found a marriage of convenience here when they all decided to contest the results, but they all had very different reasons. And there's no guarantee that they all feel the same way now about what they should do going forward. And that's why these conversations seem to have dragged on for quite a long time now. And we're still waiting for an answer about what this process is going to look like after everything that we've seen today.
Nancy Cordes there on Capitol Hill. And what we are expecting in the next half hour is a key moment, I think, for not only the Republican leadership, but the Republican Party. A moment when all eyes of the nation and the world are trained on the United States Capitol. Concern about how it could end, how it could we have reached this point at the tail end of the Trump presidency, which has already had so much controversy and now ends with this storming of what has been called the citadel of democracy.
Right. The Trump presidency is not without accomplishments. It's not without achievements. But those achievements, those accomplishments, whatever they are, and however you hold, however dearly you hold them, if you're a Trump supporter, are overshadowed, if not utterly erased, by this spectacle today of people who say they are with him, who want to topple an election and do so through anti-constitutional means and mob rule. That is and will be the lingering image of this Trump presidency. There's just no two ways about it. You cannot erase this image. This image is indelible. And Republicans are going to have to decide in the next hour and a half or so exactly how much responsibility they are willing to accept, how much they believe they have either quietly or with some of their rhetoric aided and abetted it, and what they will do to reverse it.
All right. And we will find that out, as you mentioned, in the next hour. As we're just learning to, Twitter has blocked the president's account and says he may be banned. We're going to take a quick break. Our coverage of the assault on the Capitol continues in just a moment.
Candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
4 out of 5 employers who post a job in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/hire. That's ZipRecruiter.com/hire. ZipRecruiter.com/hire.
Our continuing coverage of the assault on the U.S. Capitol continues tonight. The breaking news is the Capitol is now secure, and Congress will shortly reconvene to continue its job of counting the electoral votes. Twitter has locked President Trump's account for the next 12 hours after he tweeted that he was sympathetic to the protesters. They're not protesters, they're rioters, and he called them patriots today, which is why the president blocked their account. I want to bring in CBS's Nancy Cordes. She has been covering Congress for us. And thank you, Nancy, as we have been on the air now for better half of almost 7 hours covering all this. And Nancy, what an extraordinary day it has been. What are you learning about what these senators will do?
Well, we know that they are going to reconvene, Nora, around 8 p.m., both in the Senate and in the House. They want to get back to work. When we left off far earlier today, they had just begun the process of going through the list of states one by one in alphabetical order and reading out loud the Electoral College results from each state. And they had run into their first opposition to one of the states filed by both House and Senate Republicans to the state of Arizona. We were in the A's. So what happened then was that the two houses split up. The joint session of Congress was halted. The Senate went back to the Senate side. The House remained in the House chambers, and they commenced with 2 hours of debate. That's when you heard that very stirring speech from the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell arguing against the individuals in his own party who had decided to contest the results. He argued that this was really a race to the bottom, and that contesting the results when there is A, no evidence of widespread fraud, and B, this race wasn't particularly close, in his words. All it does is fuel mistrust in public elections, and he said that there's nowhere to go but down from there. It was a pretty prescient speech, because it wasn't much longer before these individuals who had been outside of the Capitol broke into it. And so everything had to stop. And that's where they are now going to pick up at 8 p.m. Although I anticipate, even though this is supposed to be a debate over whether to accept the election results in the state of Arizona, I expect instead that what you'll see is members of Congress who want to come and speak for a few minutes about what they saw today, how much it upset them, how much it disturbed them. And I think you'll hear a lot along those lines when the debate resumes. What we're waiting to see now is whether this process will last another couple of hours or whether it is going to last all night. And that is really up to a group of Senate Republicans who need to decide whether they are going to continue with their crusade, along with perhaps 100 House Republicans, to contest the results in up to 5 more battleground states, citing, again, widespread irregularities for which there is no evidence, or whether, given the events of the day and how shaken up everyone is and how obviously these unfounded claims of a stolen election have really stoked a segment of this population, and you know, perhaps it's time to act a little bit more responsibly, whether Republicans decide to drop their challenge changes and just say, okay, let's go ahead and ratify the results of this election. So that's what we're watching to see right now, Nora.
And Nancy, I'm sensing something right now, which is an avalanche of Republican criticism and disgust directed at the White House and the President of the United States. Liz Cheney, right now a member of the Republican leadership in the House, saying there's no question the president formed the mob, the president incited the mob. Those are very strong words. The communications director at the Republican National Committee, saying that what happened today was domestic terrorism. Our soldiers have died carrying the American flag into battle for our freedom. To see that flag used in the name of unfounded conspiracy theories is a disgrace. But there are Republican lawmakers who have also stoked those same conspiracies, Nancy.
There absolutely are, Nora. And, you know, there are even lawmakers who oppose this movement to challenge the Electoral College results who played cute themselves for many weeks when it was obvious that Joe Biden had won this presidential race and that it, frankly, wasn't a close call. Even Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who gave that very fine speech today, refused to say out loud for weeks, if not months, that Joe Biden was indeed the president-elect of the United States. You had foreign leaders, Nora, all congratulating Joe Biden, and you had almost no Republicans in the U.S. Congress who were willing to do the same. So while these lawmakers are now criticizing the president, criticizing their colleagues for going ahead with this movement, they themselves did give the president the running room to be able to continue with the claims that he was making, that this was somehow a landslide victory for him that we just all missed and that every single state botched. Had they come out sooner and shut that down and not said things like, well, we have to let every single legal challenge play out, even though they knew that so many of these legal challenges were bogus and would go nowhere, then perhaps we wouldn't be in the situation we are in right now. We just don't know.
Nancy Cordes on Capitol Hill. Thank you. I want to bring in Jeff Rosen, who is president of the National Constitution Center and is such an expert. And Jeff, it's so great to have your perspective right now, because when we talk about why the Constitution was and why, excuse me, rather, the founders were so concerned about mob rule. Explain.
They saw mobs in the street. They saw farmers mobbing courthouses because they didn't want to pay their debts. And they saw the failed democracies of Greece and Rome. Madison had, when he went to Philadelphia, two trunks of books sent by Thomas Jefferson from Paris about how Greece and Rome had fallen because of mobs inflamed by demagogues who made false promises and incited them to violence. So this is why they drafted the Constitution. And Nora, you asked earlier, what were some of the cooling mechanisms they put into place? Well, in addition to the Electoral College, which was a big one, another of the central cooling mechanisms was the Senate. And it is remarkable that senators who claimed to obey the original understanding of the Constitution, like Senators Hawley and Cruz, are abdicating the responsibility the framers thought that was placed in them to make independent judgment about facts and to reach decisions in the public interest, not because of partisan interest. So that is the constitutional choice that those senators face in the next few hours. Will they restore the Senate's role as a cooling mechanism to fight back one of the greatest, the only violent assault on the Capitol in American history? I can't believe I'm speaking those words, but that is the case. Aside from the War of 1812, when the White House was attacked, we have not seen federal buildings, the White House and the Capitol, attacked by violent mobs. Will they play that role, or will they continue to stoke the violence that the president has incited?
And Jeff, we just got in a statement from President Bill Clinton on the assault about the Capitol, saying this assault was fueled by more than 4 years of poison politics, spreading deliberate misinformation, sowing distrust in our system, and pitting Americans against one another. The match was lit by Donald Trump and his most ardent enablers, including many in Congress, to overturn the election. He also called this an unprecedented assault on our Constitution. And you also heard President-elect Biden and former President George W. Bush use the word insurrection. Those leaders would not have used that word insurrection lightly. Explain why.
Insurrection is extraordinarily serious, an armed conspiracy against the lawfully constituted authorities of the United States. The word insurrection appears in the Constitution in the 14th Amendment, which forbids anyone who's aided or abetted an insurrection from holding public or military office. That was passed after the Civil War to prevent former Confederate sympathizers from holding office. We have not previously seen an officer of the United States government calling for violence against its legally authorized authorities, or at least inciting it by encouraging it. And that is why two former presidents of the United States have talked about an assault on the Constitution. The Constitution is grounded in the rule of law and limited powers of the president and Congress and an independent judiciary all doing their job. And when mobs try to prevent any institution from doing that job, then we have the Constitution indeed under assault. So that is why it is so urgently important. The courts have spoken almost unanimously on these issues, and now it is time for the Congress of the United States to perform the only role that the Constitution assigns it, which is to count the electoral votes and to put an end to what is indeed one of the most serious assaults on constitutional values in American history.
And do you believe there's any indication that someone in our government has aided in a seditious conspiracy?
Well, we just see that the mob appeared to be responding to the president's tweets, and the president tweeted, and soon after, the mob organized on social media and summoned themselves to the Capitol. Now, it's an important and remarkably difficult legal question about whether the president's tweets themselves constitute legal incitement. To legally incite violence is a very high standard in Supreme Court law. You have to intend to and be likely to incite imminent violence. And the question is whether when the president said, gather at the Capitol or it's going to be wild, he intended to and was likely to incite imminent violence. It certainly appears that it was likely to incite it because it did. Whether he intended it, you know, he can say he was joking or some such. But that is why this is so serious. There are two questions. What was the president's role in inciting this violence? And what was the mob's role in conspiring to aid and abet it? And there are statutes governing sedition and insurrection. The Smith Act passed during World War II because of fears of fifth columnists who would rise up and threaten the U.S. during World War II. But never have these instruments been invoked against a president or against a mob attacking the Capitol. Now, this is not the time to resolve this in courtrooms. Months later, it's now that the Congress of the United States must act and make clear by its own actions that it will calm this violence and perform its constitutional duty.
Jeff Rosen, thank you so much for your constitutional expertise. And
I could listen in for hours.
I could too.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
I know. We could just listen to you for hours. I want to check in with Weijia Zhang at the White House because there are some breaking news about from the White House. And Weijia, tell us what you're learning.
Nora, we have just confirmed that Stephanie Grisham, who is the First Lady's chief of staff, has resigned. Of course, Stephanie Grisham was also President Trump's third press secretary, most well-known, especially among the press, for never holding a single press briefing. However, she was certainly a staunch defender of President Trump, who had worked with him on the campaign. And we know tonight that she has decided to leave as a result of the protests that we have all been watching unfold. She says in a statement that it has been an honor to serve the country in the White House, that she's very proud to have been part of Mrs. Trump's mission to help children everywhere and part of the many accomplishments and proud of that part of this administration, but it is certainly notable that she has decided to step down when she was really, you know, in the middle of many of fiery conflicts that involved the president. In fact, during her time here, the president was getting impeached, and she did not offer a single press briefing and rarely made public remarks to defend the president, leaving him in many ways to be his own defender, which is partially why she left the role. Now, we can also say we haven't heard from the current press secretary today, Kayleigh McEnany, who has largely avoided the press since Election Day, as members of her team slowly leave the White House as well. In fact, the former director of communications, who left just about a month ago, Alyssa Farah, tweeted out that she is also a member of MAGA, but she sent the message today that I need you to hear me. The election was not stolen. We lost. So she now has this freedom to express sentiments like that. You have to imagine that's in part at least why Stephanie Grisham has decided to resign as the First Lady's Chief of Staff. Nora?
Wei Zhejiang, thank you. Do you think that this is a move based on integrity by these individuals in terms of their true values, or is more a move of practicality as there's only 14 days left of the Trump presidency and as they try and seek new unemployment, they've been unable to find jobs?
Odd mixture of a lot of things. I know Stephanie Grisham very well. Stephanie Grisham was one of the few people who were part of the original Trump campaign in 2016, very small, five or six people. And she was not a press secretary, not even a budding press secretary. She was kind of a press wrangler who helped facilitate things on the road. She had aspirations, but she was a believer. She was very much caught up in not only the persona of Donald Trump, but the movement of President Trump, his campaign in 2016, and very much a true believer, and thought that the press was unfair, thought that Democrats obsessed about the Russia collusion investigation, thought they were unduly and unnecessarily harming this president. And she believed that very strongly and acted accordingly. But it is now quite evident that for her, and I can only say based on my knowledge of the First Lady and Stephanie Grisham and their relationship, that these things are somewhat, if not perfectly aligned, that her resignation is at least a indication of displeasure.
Suggesting that the First Lady's now going to say something about Donald Trump?
I'm just saying that Stephanie Grisham's resignation and putting out a statement like this would not be done in open defiance of the First Lady if the First Lady did not give her some indication that that was permissible.
Really? Because to me, this is the Titanic's going down, the violinists are still playing, and they just jumped off at the last moment. That's what this feels like. And there are a lot of Republicans in town who are starting to do that.
All right.
And now in the closing days, they feel
those may both be true, but I think that what Major is indicating is an acute understanding of that relationship and the loyalty with which Stephanie Grisham, who had been on the outskirts of politics
she
and
was,
had been welcomed
yes.
back into the Trump family and given prominence,
absolutely.
Why she's especially loyal to them.
Yes, and you can both things can be true at exactly
and
the same
are.
Time.
Mm-hmm. And they are.
But I don't think you can look at this and say, well, the First Lady has no opinion about this whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I cannot believe that, understanding the closeness of their relationship and what this moment means for everyone who's trying to make a decision as they look in the mirror. What have I been about? What have I represented? What have I spoken on behalf of? What have I labored on behalf of? And at this moment, with anyone in the Trump world, it is much more difficult than it's ever been to look in that mirror and say, I am completely satisfied and a total believer in what has just happened.
Art. Senior political analyst John Dickerson has noted that 4 years ago, the inauguration of President Trump, he spoke about American carnage. Mm-hmm. Tonight, there's a number of Republican officials that are saying that the President of the United States had brought disgrace to democracy. In the words of Liz Cheney, that he incited the very mob violence that took over the U.S. Capitol today, that put a strain on U.S. law enforcement. And now you see across the board, even Trump loyalists denouncing violence, fearful that they will be branded
right.
with the type of rhetorical branding which they promote, which is that they do not endorse violence, and yet it appears that they are being accused of inciting this very violence.
Right. The Law and Order Party is in a very awkward place tonight. the visuals do not support that rhetoric, and the actions of those who carried out. And Samuel Johnson is a well-known British theorist and political writer. He wrote famously, "Patriotism is the last refuge of the scoundrel." Carrying an American flag as you storm the Capitol does not make you a patriot. It does not make you blameless, and it doesn't make you someone who can't be prosecuted. Trust me, you will be, even though you carried an American flag.
And that's the point that has been made by many people, why Twitter has suspended the account of President Trump and says they may ban it altogether for calling mobsters and violent individuals patriots. CBS's Nancy Cordes covers Capitol Hill for us, joins us from up there. And Nancy, we are now just minutes away from senators and lawmakers trying to resume business there. What are you hearing?
Well, a piece of breaking news, Nora. We've now heard from the first Senate Republican who is part of this cadre that was objecting to the Electoral College results, who appears to have had a change of heart. Senator Steve Daines of Montana has just put out a statement saying, "We will not let today's violence deter Congress from certifying the election. We must restore confidence in our electoral process." So even though he signed on to the first challenge of the day against the state of Arizona, he's now saying he doesn't want any part of it. And frankly, he was always kind of a surprising addition to this crew. He's just won re-election, so he really doesn't have to worry about his electoral prospects for another 6 years. He's not really a big MAGA type, someone who ties himself very tightly to the president. But, you know, a lot of these Republican senators felt a lot of pressure, especially when you've got the president's own sons saying, "If you don't stand by our father, we're going to make sure you face a primary in the next time around." But given everything that's happened today, Steve Daines looked at the situation in front of him and decided that it was time to go ahead and try to certify these results. And what you're looking at right now, Nora, are senators in the Hart Senate office building being escorted by guards out of the secure area that they had all been in together for many, many hours. One wonders what they talked about that entire time. They're being escorted back to the Capitol because they are going to resume debate over the Arizona state results. Although, as we've been discussing, I think that there's Josh Hawley. We'll see what he does. We haven't heard from him yet one way or the other. He's one of the leaders of this challenge movement. Wow, look at the people who have been with them all this time. They've got probably members of the National Guard there, or it looks like they've got FBI on their flak jackets in full body gear. So they really were very heavily guarded during the many hours that they could not be in the U.S. Capitol because it was under siege.
You know,
and
well,
it's extraordinary to see this in the United States Capitol, to see the representatives of democracy chosen dutifully by the American electorate.
That is, by the way, the Hart Senate office building.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's clearly
being
where
escorted
they were.
By law enforcement officials with long guns and helmets and flak jackets back into the U.S. Capitol.
And the one
thing I wonder how many of them are holding their head high or embarrassed about what has happened.
Yeah. Last time they would have all been like this together for an extended period of time would have been something like after 9/11.
And the last time that there would have been this deployment of military to protect members of Congress because of an external threat would have been 9/11.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. Our coverage of the assault on the Capitol continues in just a moment.
Today, when you shop or browse online, your personal information can be exposed. One minute it's in your hand, the next it's there, there, and everywhere, making you vulnerable to cyber criminals. That's why Norton 360 with LifeLock helps protect the info on your devices, your online privacy, and your identity all in one. Your info may be out there, but safety starts here at Norton.com.
are just moments away from what Congress was convened to do today, which is to count the electoral votes and essentially put the final stamp on the fact that President-elect Joe Biden will become the 46th president of the United States and inaugurated 2 weeks from today. I want to bring in David Becker. He is an election law expert and CBS News contributor. And David, I think now is a good opportunity to just remind everybody about what we may see in the coming hour, what may happen, what's at stake for the Republicans about whether this process will move forward.
Well, we'll have to see. We have no historical precedents for this at all. We were right in the middle of what was to be no longer than 2 hour debate on the Arizona electoral votes, which had an objection from members from both the Senate and the House. Senator Lankford, there's probably about an hour and a half or maybe even a little bit more time left in that maximum 2 hours. We'll have to see if the objectors to the Arizona electoral votes want to proceed with this objection. They could always choose to withdraw it. They could end debate early. There's no requirement to go the full 2 hours. And then they would vote. And presumably, we know for certain, in fact, that that vote will fail. The objection will not be upheld. And then after that, we'll continue down alphabetically through the list. And we've got some time to go. But when we do this without objection, it can take as little as around 30 minutes to count all of the electoral votes. And we'll have to see if the Republican objectors still want to proceed with the objection in light of the fact that this activity, this lie to President Trump's supporters that something could be done to change the outcome of the election today, that whether they just reject that out of hand. And you know, I think there's a really good reason for them to reconsider their approach here. They've certainly made their concerns heard. Courts have heard this. I think we'll have to see how this all plays out. This could end earlier than we expect if Republicans either want to withdraw their Arizona election and then proceed without further objections to the rest of the electoral vote slate.
It's an important point, as David Becker points out, that you need both a member of the House right. and the Senate. So if there are still some House members, perhaps the Senate, we will wait and see. That is the question before all of us at this hour before the United States Senate.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking about how this president is disloyal to the people who are closest to him. You pointed this out earlier. We just got a statement from the former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. This one is pretty profound. He says, today's violent assault on our Capitol, an effort to subjugate American democracy by mob rule, was fomented by Mr. Trump. His use of the presidency to destroy trust in our election and to poison our respect for fellow citizens has been enabled by pseudo-political leaders whose names will live in infamy as profiles and cowardice. Our Constitution and our Republic will overcome this stain, and we the people will come together again in our never-ending effort to form a more perfect union, while Mr. Trump will deservedly be a man left without a country. That from his former defense secretary.
Profiles and cowardice. Is this ultimately the flushing of Trump from the Republican Party, or is he still quite powerful within it?
If it isn't, it's not flushable. I mean, if this doesn't do it, then the Republican Party has given itself over entirely to the personality, complex, mania, and malevolence of President Trump. This has to be the breaking point. This has to be the moment with which Republicans of conscience say, this and no more, not one inch more, we are done. And if they don't, then this becomes the Trumpian Party, and the Republican Party disappears before our very eyes.
And will Vice President Pence, who we are about to see shortly, preside over this? Will he ultimately denounce the president that he has served loyally for the past 4 years?
Well, he's already been accused by the president of effectively denouncing him by not taking extra constitutional actions to do what the president has instructed him to do, to follow the law. Following the law in President Book's handbook now means you are essentially betraying him. That's his orientation to the Constitution and the rule of law. That's where we are. And if that's not a break for the Republican Party, to your question, does this flush Trump out of it? If it doesn't, he's not flushable. He is a constant force, and Republicans will cling to it, I think, to former Defense Secretary Mattis's words, their ever-lasting infamy and detriment.
An extraordinary statement from the former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, who was called General Mad Dog by the president. He did not like that name. He did not like it at all. And he saying that this is a stain on our democracy and that Trump is to blame for that. We heard President George W. Bush, President-elect Joe Biden calling this an insurrection. Liz Cheney saying all incited and fomented by the President of the United States. The question tonight, what will the Republican Party do? Our coverage is going to continue on our 24-hour streaming network, CBSN. You can watch it at cbsnews.com or on our CBS News app. There's going to be more on your local news on this CBS station. This has been a CBS News special report. I'm Nora O'Donnell, CBS News, Washington.